Now what? Good evening, and welcome to the Monday, August 9th meeting of the City Council. Let the record show that all council members are present. We'll begin with a moment of silence, and today I want to dedicate it to one of our city employees, Albert Cavillo, who passed away last week. So please direct your thoughts and prayers to him during the moment of silence. Thank you. I'm going to go a little out of order and ask Andrea if she would just say something about Mr. Cavillo.
Thank you, Mayor, and good evening, Council. Tonight we had a moment of silence for Albert Cavillo. Albert worked for the City of Morro Bay since 2004 for the Public Services Department. And as Janice said, Albert passed away very unexpectedly last Friday. Out of all the things that I do related to my job, this tonight is by far one of the most difficult, talking about an employee who's left his family, his friends, and his coworkers far, far too early. Many of you may not know, but Albert was born and raised in Morro Bay and was a graduate of Morro Bay High School. As a result, there are many people in Morro Bay who knew and loved Albert, which includes all of us, his coworkers here in the city. Albert was extremely friendly and positive. In the past few days, I've heard people refer to him as Salt of the Earth and The Rock. Everyone he came in contact with admired his good nature, his helpfulness with all situations, whether they were big or small, and of course that infectious, jovial laugh and big, warm, friendly smile that we all remember. He was the kind of person that you immediately felt comfortable with. There was no getting used to him. To say we'll miss Albert is a huge, huge understatement, but we know he's in a peaceful place and would want us all to be happy. If we can do anything to honor Albert, it would be this: to be happy, to keep plugging away, to hold family and friends tight, to keep laughing and smiling and enjoying our lives to the fullest. Thank you.
Thanks, Andrea. It's like a member of the family when you're in a city group like this. Anybody up here want to say anything? Okay. Our love to his family. Okay. All right, we will move on. Our business person of the evening is Stephanie Moss from Morro Bay Hearing Services, and she's going to lead us in the pledge.
Please join me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice.
Very passionate in terms of explaining it and helping you understand. And so that's what I do Mondays through Thursdays. We do take Fridays off now. I'm making that nod to in lieu of retirement. I work a four-day week now because I am officially. When I started, people were concerned that I looked a bit young. Now they're all concerned that I'm planning to retire, which I'm not. But so here I am. And we have full audiological facilities and also do hearing aid dispensing, and that's my day job. And then I thought I'd do a brief plug for my night job, which is I play in a local band. And I can say, without question, we are the best local gypsy Russian cabaret-style orchestra in all of Morro Bay, because I'm pretty sure we're also the only ones. But we've been together now for about 9 years. We're playing at the Harbor Festival this year on the 3rd of October, and I hope you'll come. So, great. Are there any questions?
Any questions for Stephanie?
Would you mind saying your location and contact information
one
more time?
Thank you so much. We're at 870 Shasta Avenue, and I'm sure you all know where that is. And we're open from 9:30 until 4, although I'm happy to stay late. Not usually cheerful to come early, but I do stay late for people, and I come in on Fridays if that's necessary also.
Thank you very much.
You're Stephanie. Very welcome. Thank you so much for all you do for us.
Okay, in other announcements, there's a card. Gary, you want to put that front and center on the overhead there. The second annual Moro Photo Expo is happening this October. Registration is open right now, so that's why I'm talking about it right now. You can register at www.morophotoexpo.com. We have a whole lot of wonderful programs for everyone from the beginner to the expert. George Lepp, if you remember him, is going to be our guest speaker once again. It's a wonderful event, October 22nd to 24th, and registration is open now and going fast. So if you're interested, sign up. I also wanted to comment on the article that was in the Bay News about our JPA short meeting that we had. There were a couple of things in there that I wanted to clarify. The first was the misunderstanding about NOAA's presence or absence. When we had adjourned our previous JPA meeting, he had said that he would make arrangements to be here for the short meeting. Subsequent to that, he told Bridget or Andrea or somebody that he couldn't be, but I didn't get that message. So it was no one's fault, but I wanted to make sure that the blame didn't go to him. He wasn't in town and skipping it. He just was on vacation, which he has every right to be. So whoever was seen on the bicycle was somebody else. And also, and the second part of that, too, when I did jokingly remark that Carla was on vacation attending over the phone, and if we heard ice cubes tinkling, she was just enjoying herself. I was not referring to any sort of alcoholic beverages. I was picturing lemonade or iced tea only. So anyway, I wanted to clarify those things. I didn't want people thinking badly of either one of them. Other than that, I think that's it for my announcements. Betty?
Since our last meeting, I attended two workshops, both sponsored by different agencies, but both related to climate change. And the first one was the middle of July. It's called Slow Climate Change Adaptation Workshop. And it was put on by a state organization or a nonprofit that's going around the state. We and one other county were the ones that they came to do this. That we're the coastal, and I believe Fresno was the internal, unless I'm mixing up my two workshops. But this was a one-day workshop, and it was very informative about how the county is having to work together in light of state bills and things that we're going to need to be doing. And I hope to be sharing this in a more specific way with staff and with council. The following week, there was another workshop that was put on, sponsored by NOAA, Coastal Services, and put on by some people that come from the East Coast and have done several back there. And this is aimed specifically for coastal communities, smart growth for coastal and water communities in light of coastal change, what's expected in terms of the ocean rise and other kinds of features because we're surrounded by the estuary and other types of natural things that can happen around us. And this was a two-day workshop. A number of staff attended as well, a planning commissioner and two planning staff members. And Ms. Sue from the Harbor office was there as well because obviously it directly relates to the harbor. So very good. I missed the second day. We'll, again, hopefully what I'd like and would be my preference.
And can we show that on this? There we go. Maybe pull up a little bit. And they'll be giving free blood work. This is a program that is really geared toward seniors that maybe don't have health insurance, but nobody will be turned away if you show up. And also, just a quick note, I'm sure everybody will want to echo this. Peter Kendall is going to be having his last day Friday. I want to thank him for giving so much of himself this past 4.5 years. And Francis also, and you've done a great job, and we're going to miss you terribly. And thanks for all you've done. And then we have our police dog up there. As you can see, we're up to about close to $7,000. With our chronic problems, the high use of methamphetamines, this would be a drug dog that we would get. He would also be trained in pursuit, so it would be a dual-function dog, more fang for the buck. And a lot of people will benefit through this, schools, community outreach. We want this dog to become a recognized member of the department and the community. So checks can be sent to the police department, or you can stop by and make it out to Friends of the Morro Bay Police, and keep an eye out for future fundraisers that we're going to be having to support that effort.
Okay. Noah?
Yeah, thank you. I have three announcements. One is our Citizens Tree Committee. We're going to have our August meeting this 19th at the Community Center from 4 to 5:30, and anyone's welcome to attend that. We'll be updating what we've been working on for the last year and setting some goals going forward, and talking about some other ideas that have been coming forward to see if people are interested on the committee to take a hold of those and run with them. The other announcement, and it's a preliminary announcement, I'm going to be organizing tours of the wastewater treatment plants of Santa Paula and also Pismo Beach, as those two communities have plants that are very much related to what we're analyzing and considering for our wastewater treatment plant project for Morro Bay and Cayucas. And these are going to be public tours. My goal is to have them set at a good time for people to attend, either late August or early September. And I will be my goal is to actually announce the date and the time at the next meeting, the next city council meeting, the 23rd. So it'll be sometime the last week of August or the first week of September. And if anyone's interested, I'll make sure to get the announcement out into the papers. And if you would like to be sure to get a personal invitation and the information, you can contact me through the city website and my email address, or call me at 772-7668. So that'll be two tours, one in Pismo Beach and the other in Santa Paula. And another announcement is just a reminder, we have a special election for the 15th District Senate seat that is up for grabs right now. It's Abel Maldonado's old seat, and there's four candidates running. It's important to get out to vote. And if you have some questions about where you should vote, you should call the county clerk recorder at 781-1111. And again, that's August 17th, that's Tuesday. And a special election, it's a one-issue vote, but that's our representative for the Senate, so it's important you get out there. My third, actually it's a request to our city manager in relation to the controversy right now with the employee and benefits and everything that's going on in the community of Bell in Los Angeles. And they're getting a lot of attention because of some issues that they had with runaway salaries and benefits. We have talked, the manager and myself, about what we can do here in Morro Bay to make sure that everyone feels comfortable that we do not have those same issues here, which I assure you we don't. To that level, definitely, I don't think anyone could possibly ever get that far. I guess no one expected it to ever get that far, but it has, and in the community of Bell, and Ms. Luker has a few things to mention to update us about what we're going to be doing here in Morro Bay to make sure you all know and are aware of the information.
Thank you, Councilmember Smuckler. Just to make sure that the audience knows, as well as the council members, we do have our salary schedules on our website. They're under Human Resources, so you can see each salary schedule and what those pay. As well, we're working with PERS right now on getting additional information. If you read to the end of the article in the Tribune, that was a couple of days ago, the Tribune did note that while the city of Morro Bay is included in the risk pool with the city of Bell, as are another 138 cities in the state of California, we don't really know what the impact is going to be. Is it going to be significant? Is not going to be significant? So we have a couple of questions into the PERS, Public Employees Retirement System, as we speak, to find out what that really and truly means. Certainly, you did read that the city attorney had made some comments.
Not me, last month. However, yesterday in the paper, there was an article that the state assembly has passed the first hurdle for banning plastic bags starting 2012. So I think that that'll be coming our way real soon. Last week, I attended the Harbor Advisory Board for the first time as a liaison for the city council. I was very welcomed. It was a great meeting. They talked a little bit about the dredging project in the Back Bay and where that's going as far as funding, and hopefully we'll see that perhaps the end of next year or sometime in the more near future than not. I hope that SpaceX is still coming tomorrow. Are they coming tomorrow?
They drove it
Okay, so we get to watch that from the last meeting when they updated us about that program being out there dropping their capsule and then retrieving it back in. So that'll be some excitement for around town. August 26th is the first day of school, 2 weeks away. It came and went fast with summer, so the kids will be back out in force in a few weeks, and hopefully everybody will be watching for them. And I think that's it for now.
Okay. And staff reports, police and fire. Who'd like to go first? Fire.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. I was going to start off talking about pertussis, but we have a resident expert in the audience on infection control, so I'm going to turn that over to Claire Grantham during public comment. But we are going to have a clinic, free clinic at Fitness Works at 500 Quintana on Morro Bay from 9 to 1 on August 12th. So I'll stop there with the pertussis. You mentioned SpaceX. I just want to let the council and public know that a large helicopter will be landing at the power plant behind the wall tomorrow evening, probably just after 5 sometime. They will be doing some briefing and preparing following that the next day. The actual lift of the capsule and the drop is undetermined at this time, but it will be somewhere between the 11th and the 14th. They'll be going to an elevation of 14,000 feet offshore, about 5 miles, dropping the capsule and testing the parachute system and then hauling it away. So we're not certain exactly which day it'll be, but it's weather dependent. So as soon as we know, we'll let you know as well. We're hosting a CERT meeting on August 26th from 6 to 8 p.m. Those individuals in Morro Bay, Los Osos, and Cayucas who have been trained in the Community Emergency Response Team program, we're hosting that meeting. It's our kickoff meeting. It's a new volunteer group who will be there when there's a disaster and emergency to assist our community and those communities surrounding us. We're going to have a guest speaker, Terry Harbor, from he's retired from Long Beach Fire Department, currently working for the Red Cross. So if you want information on that, you can call me at the fire station at 772-6242. Lastly, the Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant FEMA evaluated drill is this Wednesday. So you may see some fussing around the county, but mainly it'll be activity at the county EOC, Pismo Beach, San Luis, and Diablo Canyon. The Morro Bay EOC is going to be activated. We're going to participate along on the side, but we are not being evaluated at this time. We're more doing it as a self-test and to run through our procedures and test communications and our plan. And so we'll be open in our EOC from about 8 o'clock to 10 that morning. And with that, I'll turn it over to Chief Olivas.
Okay. Good evening, Madam Mayor, Council. Since our last council meeting on July 12th, we've had a very busy month at the police department. We've responded and handled over almost 1,100 calls for service. During that, we had 20 occasions where we only had one officer in the city available for response. Some of the more significant crimes during that time frame included an attempted murder, which involved a subject trying to run another over with a vehicle. It was not successful. That was on North Main Street about 3 weeks ago. We also had a subject show up at a residence with a firearm in North Main Street, and a resulting struggle ensued. The firearm went off several times. The subject with the firearm actually sustained a gunshot wound to an arm and severe head trauma. That tied us up for about the next 5 days because we had to stay at the hospital with the subject. He was considered to be a flight risk, as well as we were concerned about possible retaliation. So, unfortunately, we incurred some significant overtime during that because we had to be there 24/7 during that whole time frame before he could be released and booked into the county jail. And this past week, we're in the process of investigating a rape that actually occurred here in Morro Bay. So it's been a very difficult month for staff with the limited staff we have, but everybody's been stepping up to the plate and working extra shifts and really pulling through. So they are to be commended for that. We have seen an increase in graffiti, unfortunately. We had the graffiti incidences out at the Rock, which have been cleaned up, and those are still under investigation. We've been receiving reports of graffiti out in the Cloisters area, and we have a testing process set up within the first week of September. Testing process includes actually a written test and two oral boards, a professional panel as well as a department panel. We have an officer vacancy from Officer Curtis Mooneyhan, who went back to Diablo. We were very fortunate. We tested back in January for officer positions, where we picked up actually Officer Stephanie Pippen, who has been a great addition to our department. We had a second candidate who made it all the way through the testing process, and we are in the process of recontacting him and starting him into a background and psych and medical process, and hopefully have him on by the end of this month. And Officer Doug Collins is expected back from Iraq in October, which we'll be very happy to have him back in our PD family. And in dispatch, we had a dispatcher who was in the field training process, unfortunately resigned, but we were blessed with having a great reserve dispatcher who has actually accepted the full-time position. So we are going to be adding Andrea Damien to a full-time dispatcher position. We'll be back in the process of testing for our reserve dispatcher. And that's it. I conclude that with my report. Thank you.
Okay. I want to reiterate something you said, and that is we have, as you know, we don't have a lot of police officers. Morro Bay is a very safe town. We haven't always needed a lot of police officers. But all of you out there, please keep your eyes open. And if you see anything that makes you uncomfortable or suspicious, please let them know. They need all the help, all the eyes on the street that they can get, especially with this graffiti situation. So let's all kind of be deputies, unofficial. Andrea, did you have anything else from administration?
No, thank you, Mayor.
Okay, and we did not have a closed session. So before we start the public comment, I would ask the council to pull and approve item A4, which is a proclamation regarding the month of the Dahlia.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Okay, and if Carol Norton would meet me at the podium, please. Okay. She brought the dahlias with her. Okay, this is a proclamation of the City of Morro Bay declaring the month of August 2010 as the month of the Dahlia and August 27th and 28th as Dahlia Days. Whereas the Morro Bay Garden Club was founded in September 2006, and in 1965 the City of Morro Bay designated the Dahlia as the city flower, Morro Bay is recognized for having the ideal climate and conditions for tending dahlias, and several varieties of dahlias have originated in Morro Bay. The Morro Bay Garden Club will celebrate the city flower and also hold its annual local show, Dahlia Days, on August 27th and 28th in the Morro Bay Community Center. Therefore, be it resolved that the City Council of the City of Morro Bay does hereby proclaim August 2010 as the month of the dahlia. You want to fill us in on the event?
Thank you very much, Janice. Our Dahlia Days will be Friday and Saturday at the community center. And on okay. Anyway, Friday will be there from 7:30, from 5:30 to 7:30, and we will have wine and cheese, and there'll be all kinds of dahlias. Dahlias are remarkable because they can be this tiny and huge, and our climate is really wonderful for that. We'll also have an art show and some talks about dahlias from dahlia growers themselves. And then Saturday we'll also be selling dahlias, and it'll be 1 to 4, and there'll be a little dance recital, and we'll have booths by many local organizations who are celebrating dahlias and the environment and everything wonderful about Morro Bay. So we hope that you'll all see us, that you'll all come see us, and it's all free. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, and with that, we'll open our public comment.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, members of the council, members of the audience. I am city staff Brian Reynolds, the county library director, and I'm here to comment on one of your consent items, which is a lease between the county and the city for another 25 years for the library. I know we all agree that the library is a very important asset to the community, and I know the libraries are going to be important for many years to come. I would like to thank the city staff and your council and the friends of the library and the community at large, also the county staff that helped us put this together and reach a successful conclusion. We're very proud of what's happened, and we hope you approve it tonight. And it's just a lot of pride and a lot of joy. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
events: the Kite Festival, Avocado Margarita Festival, honoring our largest fruit, the avocado. And as such, he also traveled to San Francisco for the world's largest green event. At the time, the Expo had no category for the chamber. I recall we ended up with an eco-friendly destination, something this council and previous councils wanted to position Morro Bay as a destination. Peter has hosted countless writers to promote Morro Bay in their writings. Over the past year, the chamber has worked with the New Harbor Tour, Lost Isle Adventures, Alan and Wendy, their business to develop oyster tours and other Morro Bay activities, something we all encourage. The staff at the Morro Bay Chamber is professional. They help at events, their own and others. This weekend, the Relay for Life had their food vendors canceled the day before. And who did they turn to? The Morro Bay Chamber, and they did come through. When a visitor comes to Morro Bay and they are looking for something, where do they go? Often the Morro Bay Chamber. And whether the answer is a chamber member or not, they get professional help. We will miss Peter as Chamber CEO, but I know Morro Bay is still dear to him. He has accomplished a lot with the assistance of so many. Now we must move forward. Whoever is selected will have an opportunity to continue to promote Morro Bay as the special community we have all come to love. Thanks for listening.
Thank you. Hello, Virginia Hiramatsu, Morro Bay resident. And I'm also co-chair of the Relay for Life. And I was co-captain of the police department, city, and POSPA team that participated at the event. I want to thank everybody in this community who participated and helped in every way possible. As John said, one of our vendors did not come through, and we called, in addition to the chamber, we also called Morro Bay Farms, and they came through. We called them the day before, and they said, we will be there. And they were there the entire day. And they will be on board for next year. I also want to thank very much Carla Borchard and Rick Grantham, council members who were very active at the event. Thank you very much. Last year, we had 30 survivors, and our goal this year was to have 35. We had 95 survivors that participated in the event this year. We had 22 teams last year with only 7 weeks to prepare. We raised $10,000. Our goal this year was $25,000. We raised $32,000. It was a magnificent event. Everybody had a good time. The girls from the Grizzly Academy came all 3 days, well, Friday night to help set up, all day Saturday, and Sunday morning. They were awesome. They helped. They know how to put up pop-ups and tents. They worked with Fitness Works. They were great. Can't say enough good about them. And the ceremony Saturday night at 8 o'clock, the Luminaria ceremony, was very inspirational and very emotional. And I want to thank you again to everybody who was there. Thank you. Thank you.
Good evening. Claire Grantham, resident of Morro Bay. And I'm here speaking in my other side as a registered nurse with a specialty in infection prevention. And as Mike said, we are currently in the middle of a statewide pertussis outbreak. And it's really, really important that people understand this. Pertussis is a bacterial infection that can be so very dangerous to very young children. It actually kills babies because they're too young to be vaccinated. So far in the state, 7 infants have died under the age of 3 months. So it's really, really a big deal. And most people think that they've had a vaccination, and they haven't. As a young child, everyone gets vaccinated, but by the age of about 7 or 8, it begins to wane. So recently, the new adult version of the pertussis vaccine, which is called Tdap, has only been around since 2006. So many, many people think that they've been vaccinated, and they haven't. So the Public Health Department, in concert with the state of California, but we survive. These little kids do not survive it. So it's really, really important. So if you know people that have little kids, are pregnant, grandparents, please go get it. And those of you who would like a free vaccine, go to FitnessWork and you can get it. Also, you can get it from your doctor. The Public Health Department is making appointments for them as well. Okay? And I just want to compliment Virginia for Relay for Life. It was great.
Thank you.
Actually, Ms. Grantham?
Yes.
Or Nurse Grantham?
Nurse Grantham.
Do you mind speaking just briefly to what preventative type things people can do as well in their life?
Well, preventative, the most preventative thing you can do is get vaccinated, but it's the same thing, you know. If you're sick, don't go out in public, wash your hands. The problem is, I went to a lecture on this just last week, and one of the physicians, he came up from UCLA and spoke to a group of us. He said that 50% of the adults that they are find that they're testing positive for pertussis have no symptoms. So the important thing is you can be contagious and not be symptomatic. So that's why the vaccination is so very important. Is that helpful?
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Joan Decker. I live here in Morro Bay, and I'm Vice President of the Morro Bay Friends of the Library. With the acceptance by the County Board of Supervisors, we are looking forward to your approval of the Morro Bay Public Library lease agreement, and we're also looking forward to 25 more years of continued outstanding service to you and the community, and we thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Nancy Johnson, Morro Bay resident, member of the Morro Bay Garden Club, and chairperson for Dahlia Days. And you have a new podium because there used to be a flat place up here where you could set things, so I'll hold on to this. Dahlia Days, as you know, is August 27th and 28th. We're expanding this year as we have every year since 2006. Our wine and cheese reception Friday evening will include a wonderful speaker, Kevin Larkin, who's the vice president of the National Dahlia Society, and he owns Coralitas Gardens, where they grow and sell dahlias up in Coralitas. Saturday, the festival from 1 to 4, we'll have lovely plants for sale. This is one of our smaller ones, and it's getting ready to bloom just in time. We will have more great speakers. We have Joe Sable, who's a gentleman with his wife Jill from San Luis Obispo, who grow tons of dahlias all the way from about this big to this big. He was a major prize winner at the fair this year. He'll be here to talk a little bit to us about how he grows dahlias. Then we have a special treat from Miss Karen's dance studio. We will have dancing dahlias. You won't want to miss that. Followed by a couple of speakers from the Master Gardeners, who will talk to you about how to prevent insect infestation and disease in your dahlias without using pesticides or herbicides. It's called IPM, Integrated Pest Management. So they'll be there too. We want everybody in Morro Bay, and that means everybody, to bring your dahlias to display. We will have tables available. We will have little vases available. And as many dahlias as you bring, we'll find a place for them. We'd like to fill the community center with dahlias grown in Morro Bay. The last thing to tell you about is our Art in Bloom. We have about 14 local artists who will be displaying their work, paintings primarily, And each one of those will have a flower arrangement to go with it. So there'll be lots to see and do. Every garden club in the county will be here, from Atascadero to Paso Robles. We will have master gardeners there. We will have, I think, our local garden up the hill there on Ironwood will be there. So the 4-H will be there. Lots of things to see and find out about the Historical Society. We have some wonderful vendors who will be there selling books, and someone has photographs of Dahlia she's going to be selling this year. So join us, please, Friday evening and Saturday for Dahlia Days. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Mayor, council members, city staff, I'm Peter Candela with the Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce.
Thank you, Peter.
Good evening, David Nelson. I'm a resident here. Noah, you can sign me up for your trip to Santa Paula, because coincidentally, that's what I was going to talk about. I, as a citizen of Morro Bay, don't understand why the three votes that voted for hiring a $250,000 a year manager for a plant that I really think is ill-conceived to begin with, the trench plant, after finding out what PERC does, just seems really a dumb way to go. I mean, I was at the sewer meeting where the PERC representatives were there, offered our city a PERC plant for $20 million. They're gonna plan it. They're gonna build it. They're gonna run it. I mean, you don't need a manager if you have these people building that. That's another $250,000 down the drain, because we have consultants doing environmental studies that, again, one company could do. I mean, I don't think that you guys studied what PERC has to offer. I just brought a quick clip sheet of. I know you know Meg Whitman. Now, Meg Whitman on the 30th toured the Santa Paula plant, and what she said, it's a great example of how we can use technology and innovation to improve vital services in California. She further said, this environmentally friendly project will save Santa Paula residences and businesses money, and that's because when you compare the PERC plant to a trench plant, Fillmore, Santa Paula, Fillmore people are paying twice as much as Santa Paula. Santa Paula is paying $53 a month guaranteed by PERC. That's what they said at the meeting that I was at. They're going to guarantee our rates for 30 years. I would like you guys to explain to me why we are continuing this jam it down our throat kind of attitude that they used in Los Osos. It didn't work there, and you can bet it's not going to work here, because people are way too well informed. And this is our money. I mean, $8 million off the top, and we're still going to dump the water out in the ocean, which doesn't make any sense in a drought-torn state. We could have this water irrigating lots of stuff. We could be selling this to farmers that need to replenish their water underground. I mean, I don't understand why you're rushing into this. I mean, Carly even called in from her vacation to make sure it went through. I'd like to know the reason why we're pushing for this trench plant so heavily. And don't tell me that it's just the water board and the timetable, because we've shined them for years. And if anybody can do it, Mr. Schultz can keep them busy and keep them off of our backs. As long as we're moving in the right direction, the water board's not going to hassle us. I mean, in here, 2 weeks after they signed a contract, they were breaking ground down in Santa Paula. So, you know, as a citizen of this town, I want the best we can have. And dumping water out in the ocean when we can have it coming out and using it isn't the best. And the consultants even said, if you want water to come out of your plant so that you can irrigate, that's going to cost more money.
Thank
we
you.
Have ex- we have...
Thank you.
Don't waste our money.
Good evening, Council. My name is Joan Solu, and I am a citizen of Morro Bay, but I also sit on your TBID board as your chair. I'm following A2 tonight in case you have any questions. We had a medium-length discussion at our meeting regarding A2, which is the designations of board members for the TBID board, so I'm here. I'll sit through that and answer any questions that you might have, if you have any at all. In addition, I'd just like to say that Dahlia Days is coming up, and your TBID is proud supporters of your Dahlia Days Festival. And we hope that as this festival grows year on year, that we will be able to continue to support small local festivals that are startups like this, and just bring these to the weekend dates when the weekend would otherwise not be supplied with anything. And that's an especially great date for us as lodgers, because that is the weekend after school starts, which is typically the worst weekend of the summer for Morro Bay. So that's a really great date to add a festival on. So they chose a wonderful day to do it, or weekend rather, to do it. Also, just a reminder, as Carla said, school is back in on Wednesday the 25th. So drive carefully. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Good evening. I'm Bill Yates, resident of Morro Bay. I wanted to speak briefly on 555 Main Street. I encourage you to approve extending those permits. True, they have expired, but with the conditions that we have now, any
be done. I agree with what's being done behind the scenes regarding that. I think it's a good idea, and I want to thank you for holding a very nice meeting, and you're doing a good job. Also, I would like to ask, I don't know who of you in the council could help me with this, but we have an ugly fence in North Morro Bay between the freeway and Main Street. I'm sure it has a name, but I can't think of it at the moment. And I'd like to ask if we could maybe have a bit of an upgrade on that ugly fence. I saw one in Atascadero. It's between the freeway and the main street of Atascadero, and it's kind of to the north, beyond the intersection of 41. And if you could, anyone is over there, take a look at it. It's green. It has, like, real top to it, so it doesn't just sag and do all these weird things. And the bottom, actually, is secured as well, but it is cyclone. But it's a better-looking cyclone design. That's possible. But anyway, if any of you could help me out with that, I'd appreciate it. I don't know, maybe somebody could phone me about it. Also, I want to say a little quick thing about my friend Ray McKilligott. I know, Janice, that you were sweet enough to say something last month about him, but I just had to mention his name again and how much we will miss him. And I wanted to tell his family and Marion how extremely proud we were of everything that Ray did in this community, whether you agreed with what he did or not. I mean, he was the champion, and he never stopped trying. And I know that when there were things that I would be passionate about and I would need help with, Ray was always right behind me, and I knew that I could count on him to support most of the things that I believed in. So anyway, I just wanted to reiterate that Ray is a treasure, and we'll all miss him very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have two things. My name is Dorothy Cutter, and quoting on D2, I do not agree with Mr. Yates. I think you should let this expire. We need to follow our codes. When Mr. Yates was mayor, he was very supportive of developers who were always looking for variances. So I think it's important to maintain our nice city and support our codes. The other thing I want to say is that in a recent political campaign ad sent out by Sam Blakesley, there was a photo of Carla Borchard, Morro Bay councilwoman beside a statement that contained false information about John Lynn. Since Morro Bay Council is supposed to be nonpartisan, this reflects badly on our city and undermines public respect and confidence in its elected officials. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, members of the council. My name is John Barta. First, item D2, just say yes. It's easy. All you got to do is say yes, and we'll have affordable housing here in town. We'll get rid of an empty eyesore out there. Please say yes. I'd like to talk a little bit about civic process, and I hope Councilwoman Winholtz is paying particular attention to this. This council meeting is the heart of how we citizens regulate our civic affairs. We pay taxes that hire city staff. We vote, and we vote to give our power to the five of you, and we expect you to take the input from the paid staff that we pay for, to consider the public input, and then to have a reasoned discussion, and finally to take a vote. There's an odd number of you up there for a reason, and that is because you're not going to win all the votes. There's some of you coming out 3-2, some going to come out the other way. You're going to win, you're going to lose sometimes, but we expect you to participate. And when one of you consciously disrupts that process by leaving a meeting and attempting to break a quorum, you're breaking the promise to the voters, and you're breaking this process down. And frankly, you're disqualifying yourself from future office. Lastly, I'd like to say something about Albert Calvillo. I've known Albert and his family for a long time, and I know that Diane has more friends than she realizes. You know, Albert was the guy that always got the job done. He was there doing the job, doing it well, with a real positive attitude and a laugh that I will not forget. Thank you.
Jackie, Paul, they came here in 1950. Paul helped build the plant here in Morro Bay. Just the greatest people in the world. You know, Albert's got kids. The whole family, I just have to say, I was just, you know, I know this isn't a forum to do a memorial, but I don't think enough was said about just what a wonderful family the Cavillos are. And I just hope everybody has Diane and Mrs. Cavillo, Ricky, David, everybody in their prayers, because this family certainly deserves it. And Albert was a hell of a guy. He had more balls than anybody in the city put together. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, thank you. The only thing that I wanted to say, that one of the comments about the highway fence, I believe that's Caltrans property, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct? Yeah. And
yes, Caltrans owns and maintains that fence, and they did have a project there that has been since shelved.
So they're not going to be
replacing the fence.
Probably funding, I would expect.
When you say shelved, Mr. Lavick, does that mean that it's on hold until funding comes available, or they just basically decided it's not a priority anymore?
It's not a priority, and much of it couldn't be funded because it was the fence was allowable under the replacement, but they wanted to put vinyl cladding on the fence. That wasn't fundable, and you really can't get vinyl cladding on a fence later in date, so they didn't have sufficient funds to do the project that they wanted to do.
Okay. And I'm sorry, I don't know if I officially closed public comment, but it's closed. Okay, anything else? Comments?
excuse me. Virginia was up here thanking everybody, and I just want to take a minute to thank her and Andrea Kleffelt, because they did a phenomenal job with Relay for Life. And not just Mr. Grantham and myself, but many staff members, the fire chief, and people from all over the city were there, and they did a phenomenal job. Virginia and Andrea both, thank you.
Thank you. Anything else? All right, we'll take a short break, and we'll come back for our public hearings. AGP, are you back there? They're on a break, too. There we go. Okay. All right, we're back with our first public hearing item, which is item B1, an ordinance amending the Public Utilities Chapter Sewers to add a section of on collection of past due accounts. Introduction and first reading, and Susan is going to be presenting this.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor Peters and council members. This item before you is the introduction and first reading of Ordinance Number 560, which makes a minor change to the sewers chapter of the Municipal Code. This change adds Section 13.12.215, Collection of Past Due Accounts, a section which currently exists in the Water Services chapter. By adding this to sewers, it clarifies the city's right to collect past due sewer charges. Staff is recommending that council accept public comment and then ask the city manager to introduce and read Ordinance 560 by number and title only. And this ends my report. Thank you.
Okay. Any questions? Okay. This is a public hearing. Anyone wishing to speak on this item, please come forward. And seeing none, we'll bring it back to the council. Any comments? Go ahead.
Just that I think it closes a potential loophole, and it's a prudent thing, in my opinion, to do.
Okay. Any comment?
I was going to say a similar thing. It's actually a repetition of something that's in the water section, and even though that's covered, I think it clarifies.
Okay. May I hear a motion?
Move approval of B1.
By title and number only.
Okay.
Yeah.
Move the city manager to introduce and perform the first reading of Ordinance Number 560 by number and title only.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? None.
This is Ordinance Number 560, an ordinance of the City of Morro Bay to amend Title 13, Public Utilities, Chapter 13-12 by adding Section 13.12 by adding Section 13.12.215, Collections of Past Due Accounts to the City of Morro Bay Municipal Code.
Okay. We'll move on to item B2, which is the introduction and first reading of an ordinance amending Morro Bay Municipal Code regarding the city manager's power of appointment of city officers and employees. Rob.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. This item also is a cleanup action that was reviewed, part of a grand jury report that came.
Okay. Any questions?
I just have one, and it's not directly this item, but I think in the past we've talked about what kind of council input we'd like with evaluations on these particular positions and other department heads. And I just want to confirm with the city manager that that's still on our agenda list, and if she might know when that might be coming forward.
It is on your agenda list. It does not include it includes department heads only. And it is something that we'll bring forward probably in the next couple of months. We've been busy with budget, but it's on the list.
Thank you.
Okay, any questions on this item? This is a public hearing. Anyone wishing to speak, please come forward. And seeing none again, we'll bring it back to the council. Discussion and or a motion?
Make a motion. I move introduction and first reading of Ordinance Number 561 by number and title only, amending Morro Bay Municipal Code Section 2.12.090.
Do I hear a second? Okay. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. All right. Thank you. We'll move on to item B3.
Would you like me to...
Oh, sorry.
This is Ordinance Number 561, an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Morro Bay amending Section 2.12.090 of the Morro Bay Municipal Code regarding the city manager's power of appointment of city officers and employees.
Okay, now we'll move on to item B3, which is a hearing to consider public testimony regarding the proposed increase in assessment to the Morro Bay Tourism Business Improvement District. Rob.
Good evening again. Pursuant to your direction, this item continues the process to increase the Morro Bay Tourism Business Improvement District from 2% to 3% by asking the council to take public testimony regarding the increase and to levy the assessment within the city's jurisdiction. The purpose of tonight's public meeting is to receive oral and written protests by the owners of the lodging businesses within the city's jurisdiction. If there is written protest from owners of the lodging businesses that pay 50% or more of the proposed assessment, no further proceedings would be able to take place. From this point forward, after tonight's, we do have another public hearing, which is September 13th, 2010, which you would consider the amended ordinance. The second reading would then occur on September 27th, 2010. However, all written protests or oral protests have to be before the September 13th, 2010 meeting. You did approve, as you recall, going back a little bit, you approved the resolution of intent to do this on July 12th, 2010. Shortly thereafter, on July 14th, 2010, the city sent out notices to all the members of the lodging industry about the proposed increase from 2% to 3%. From a historical standpoint, we began this process a year ago, and in the first year we did include 3%, but that dropped back based on your first year. You intentionally said it would drop back to 2%, which did beginning July 1st. So for July and August, we've been collecting 2%. So although this is going from 2% to 3%, it's actually the exact same amount that we collected for the entire first year of the T-bid. And that's the only language we are taking out of the ordinance, is that commencing June 1st, 2009, or 2010, we were going to go to the 2%. So we're going back to the 3%. And with that, I'll ask that you open it up for any public comment, and then we'll move to continue on with the draft ordinance increasing it from 2 to 3%, which will be held on September 13, 2010.
Okay. Any questions?
I have a question. Mr. Schultz, council did this with the intent that some of our expenses regarding promotion would be picked up with this percentage increase. How do we guarantee that that information stays available to future councils or to the T-bid? Or is that just something that we did this one time and it goes away?
I would say that's, I hate to say it, but I think it's a one time. Each year you'll do an annual report on where the money is spent, and that still needs to come forward to you of the annual report from the T-bid. And so that'll show where the money was spent from that year, and you'll get that. But we did not write into the ordinance that so much has to be spent on certain line items.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay.
In that sense, future councils could change any of the amount mm-hmm. of the T-bid.
Thanks.
Any other questions?
I remember talking about this before, and we did talk about a time limit. And there's no mention of time limit regarding any sunset on this or reevaluation after a specific time period.
No, I asked that last time, and what it was this has to be reviewed every year anyway.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So if there's any desire to change it in 2 years when we can go for a TOT again, if that's our desire, or that counts.
You know, you've got your annual – when I bring the whole ordinance next time, you'll see the annual report requirements that requires this each and every year to come back to council before the fiscal year, so it should come in April or May, just like the Cloisters does to you annually to reassess it. And that would be your opportunity to either move it up, down, or to eliminate it. But in an ordinance, I don't really care to see language that is a maybe. I mean, if you do want it to sunset, then we should specifically state that.
Wouldn't it just be that it would be a line item in their budget each year, unless otherwise it's changed? That would be how you would track it, wouldn't it be?
Correct, but I think the issue was sunsetting the 3% to go back to 2%, or I think that was the issue. And if that's the desire of the council, then that's what we'd have. My understanding was it was going to be 3%, and each year there'd be an annual review, so that if you don't make any changes, we don't have to go through this whole public hearing process and meetings, you know, because that's what we did. We took it from 3% to 2% and then realized we don't want to do that. I don't want to have to do that process unless you feel it's really going to go to 2% and we're going to stick to it.
Well, I think speak for myself, but I think our shared concern is that does this hamper us in terms of changing the TOT in the future, and for future councils, that they're aware of this dialogue that we've had for the last several months since the budget, and that would be my only concern.
I don't think it hampers us in any way, because it comes back every year for review. So that'll be brought up every year and in 2 years when the TOT could go on the ballot. I'm sure it will be mentioned.
I mean, I will give you the example. You know, your tax increase on a TOT has to be done during an election year, so that would be in 2 years from now.
Right.
So if council, you know, decides to do that, what we would do at the same time as we put that on the ballot, we would then reduce it that year. And if the council doesn't decide, then it would just stay at 3%. That's the scenario I envision, because usually by April, you know, you could either put it on the June, your TOT, you do get two choices, two times, because we do have the two general elections. You could do it in your June of 2012 or November of 2012.
But it saves a lot of work if we don't want to do it.
Correct.
Okay. All right. This is a public hearing. Anyone wishing to speak, please come forward.
Good evening, Council. Joan Solu with your T-Bid Board. They have sent me to follow this all the way through its process, so you're going to be seeing me a couple more times regarding this. Just want to let you know that your T-Bid Board supports the return of the assessment back to a 3%. And we did show you in previous meetings where we would spend some of that, a lot of that money would go towards our visitor center here in this city to support that, thus relieving your general fund of some of those weights. So we're looking to be helpful towards you as well by using some of our pooled collective money to support tourism here in our city again, as we have done throughout the entire year with the full share. We have supported and advertised and carried the city with us. We haven't just supported lodging. We've done some things like supported the return of the 4th of July fireworks with a one-time $10,000 grant because they were a startup. Morro Bay 4th was a startup, and they brought those fireworks back, and it was really phenomenal for this city. From the point of fireworks to right now, there have been many, many sold-out midweek days in this city. And so it's really great to drive by and see hotelier friends waving at me with a big smile on their face because they're sold out. Every time the hotels are sold out, that creates jobs in this city for linen companies and chemical companies and green companies and landscapers. It creates jobs for our city employees because we have water and plumbing issues. Hotels are not all glamour. If you own a 58-room hotel, you own 60 toilets so and 60 shower heads and whatnot. So it does create jobs at Ace Hardware and plumbing companies. So please know that we have promoted this city citywide, and we are looking to continue to do that with a little bit bigger budget that we're going to share by trying to relieve some of your general fund. Okay? Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay. We'll bring it back to council. Discussion or a motion?
I'll go ahead and make a motion.
Okay.
I move that the city council direct staff to bring forth the draft ordinance increasing the Morro Bay tourism
business. We have our item D2, which is probably going to take us a while in discussion. So with the council and Mr. Ohilski's hopefully not objecting, we'll go ahead and do the consent first. So
I move approval of A1, and we already did A2, right?
Yes. No, we did A4.
A1.
We did A4.
A4.
So
what was A2?
A1 and A2. That's the bylaws.
Oh.
I was just changing the hotel.
I did have a question about that for Ms. Solo, if I could do that real quickly. But
all
I'll
right,
go ahead and move approval of A1.
All right.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay, A2, Betty. And Joan, I think we're going to have you up here again.
Could you just clarify for me, because I'm not sure where my item went. The issue about how you've changed the numbers, and I believe that's to make sure that both ends of the hotel sizes are represented, and you had your discussion at your meeting. could you just guarantee for me that this is about the number of rooms and not about the hotel size? Because I understand that one person can own a number of hotels, and so they really are considered on the bigger end as opposed to someone who owns a hotel that might have just a few rooms.
Right. So, Joan Solu, thank you for the question. So, we do have a designation on the board that is a large hotel. And again, I go back to Morro Bay has no large hotels. Our largest hotel is about 100 rooms. And in the hotel industry, that 100 rooms is considered a small boutique hotel. So I just want to point that out. Your large hotels are 5,000 rooms or 500 and above. Let's put it that way. Those are actually mid-scale, 500 and above. So we have no large hotels here. So we have, but what we do have is a really wonderful group of volunteers. And so in order to get those to kind of be able to have a board that works was a little stringent and closed in. So what we did is a 22 rooms and below is a guaranteed lock for a small hotel, 22 rooms. You could have a hotel that's two rooms and a hotel that's six rooms, or you could have a hotel that's two rooms and a hotel that's 20 rooms, and you could be 22 rooms and below. We have, on the other end of that, hotels that are, I want to say, 58 and larger, and that could be a multiple. So, for example, Vice Chair Jaquez has three hotels in the Bartfield Group, and that puts her into that larger category because those rooms are pooled. Our median size hotel or our average amount of hotel rooms in the city is 24 rooms. So what we did is we took the two other hotelier designations on the board and said, let them be a hotel at large because our average size hotel is about, is 27 rooms. So anything lower than 27 rooms would be considered actually a small hotel here in town. And anything above 27 would be our large end. So we could have anybody fall in there in that group, a 24, a 26, you know, Alex Amini at the Breakers, he has 27. Mr. Patel, I think his name is Ron, at the Villager, he has 22 rooms, so he would be the lower end. The Bungalow, Beach Bungalow, we have 12 rooms. So therefore, myself and Karen Biagini are now designated as at-large. She's with the Estero. The Embarcadero Inn, and I have the Beach Bungalow. So there's a wide range of hotels represented.
So there's one represented for the low end, one for the high, and then two people that just float.
Two people who float at-large, and say Motel 6 came in and they had 99 rooms, they could be an at-large.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay.
For approval?
Yeah.
All right. I move the City Council adopt Resolution 4210, which amends the Morro Bay Tourism Business Improvement District Advisory Board bylaws related to member designation.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. All right. And Betty, A3.
A3 has to do with the lease assignment for the library. And I just need to raise a concern and either need to be assured that it's not a concern or there's another way to handle it. And that is, as I was reading through this, I got through, if you look at the lease assignment itself, if you look at item number 3, the terms, item number 9, in particular those two, and then to a lesser degree number 7, it all gives the impression that in 25 years, that the library is done. There's no explicit place here that says that we're going to
get concerns about that, but I appreciate Councilmember Winholt's concern about that. Secondly, the map will include the parking. You can approve the agreement tonight. We'll be changing the map. It's an administrative issue. I talked also to Mr. Grant about that. So I think those two items have been taken care of. It shouldn't be a huge deal for tonight.
Okay, so approval could be with the understanding that the map is going to be
correct, because the language corrected in your lease talks about the parking lot and the maintenance of the parking lot. The Exhibit A just doesn't include it. One of the things that occurred, nobody's fault certainly, is that there was a tight timeline between the county approval and the city approval.
so that has resulted in an exhibit getting attached.
Okay. Let me just read the language that bothers me under number 9. At the expiration of the tenancy hereby created, lessee shall surrender the lease premises in the same condition. So it's say that it will be exited. And in number 3, it talks about the lease can go beyond the initial 25 years, shall continue on a month-to-month. But that, to me, doesn't imply, you know, another 25 years. And with the Embarcadero leases, I do object to month-to-month. I think it creates trouble for us. And I guess what I'd rather see is a finite date and then know, maybe say that then at that point, within a year ahead of time, like we do with the Embarcadero, we'll begin renegotiation for the next 25 years. But I'd be more comfortable with something like that than, you know, it's up and we're done and you get to vacate the premises.
I guess I wouldn't be too concerned about it. Number one, in 25 years, who knows what a library will be? Number two, there's no reason. I mean, we had the same sort of a lease already, and it expired, and we agreed to extend it after going month to month for a while. So, I don't think we had to.
Well, I think that lease said we would renegotiate, and we had to go month to month because we didn't get it done.
So I don't see that as being a problem if a library is still desired. I'm sure that we're going to continue with it. What I would see as a problem is if we don't approve this now, then it has to go back to the Board of Supervisors, and I don't know if we really want to do that.
That's my question that I'd have for our staff is there something administratively that we can do that speaks to Ms. Winholt's concern that wouldn't cause a delay but introduce some soft language, you know, making sure that it's not making it sound like, okay, we're done at 25 years or we're going to month to try to figure something out at that point?
Unfortunately, any change that we make would need to go back to the Board of Supervisors in terms of the language in the lease document.
Yeah, I mean,
I will reiterate that the county certainly wasn't concerned, nor were the Board of Supervisors with this order.
I think what you're asking for is either a longer term or an option to enter into a second term, mm-hmm. Which would be part of the negotiations, whether they wanted that, and they didn't ask for that. If the Board of Supervisors had wanted that. So, I mean, if you want us to, we'll take that back and say our city council wants to give you an option for a second 25-year term. That it did not come up in any of the negotiations, so it wasn't included.
I'm looking in the old lease. I don't, Councilmember Winholtz, maybe you specifically remember. I don't particularly see it. It might be in here. I've got it in front of me. And as Mr. Schultz said, we're certainly happy to tell the county that we want them to be.
Well, or would we just take over the use of the building and then they would continue to hold the library? I guess I'm a little puzzled that this didn't come to us in closed session, that we could look at it. I mean, I know we talked about it in June, but I don't think we ever saw the document.
Right, and it's a standard clause in any lease agreement that has a set term, which is 25 years, is for the premises to be returned to the owner. That's standard. And in any case during the negotiations, why it didn't come to you is if they had asked for an option for a longer term, then we would have brought it to you. What we did bring to you was the basic terms, which included the term of 25 years. If you want to give them a longer term, we certainly could go back to them and say, our council wants to give a longer term, or we want you to have an option, or we want you to have something else.
Well,
so
I would say
if you want,
if he has any concerns, does the council want to hear from Mr. Reynolds as to whether he's concerned about this?
Yeah. What I found, Ms. Luker, is number 23. If I'm looking in the right lease, this is the 84 lease. It talks about holdover in the event that the county shall hold over after expiration, any extension or renewal thereof. So it actually kind of throws in that word that, you know, there could be an extension, there could be a renewal.
And goes on to say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure the county would sign any type of option that gives them complete authority. I would caution the city, though, since they haven't asked for that, and you never know what could happen in 25 years, that you hold your options open.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any further discussion?
Well, I guess I just close that with saying that more than representing, I guess, the city as the government at that point, I'm concerned about the residents, that they don't think that there won't be something for them in 25 years. And it just kind of shouted at me, and so I felt it important to raise that as a resident who's going to be using the library when I'm 85, that I'd like to know it's still here. And that's why I would raise that as a kind of a red flag.
Okay. Any other discussion?
Move approval of A3.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Okay. Thank you. And we will now move on to item D1 has been pulled, so we'll move on to item D2. And I understand that, Carla, you need to step down for this item.
For conflict of interest, I will be stepping down.
Okay. This is determination of whether development entitlements and permits at 555 Main Street have expired pursuant to Morro Bay Municipal Code section. And Carla is stepping down for a conflict of interest. Rob?
Good evening again. This is a little bit of an odd one. In my 13 years or 14 years now sitting here, I haven't come across this issue. So I'll take you through a little bit of where we are on this and asking for your guidance, staff is. And that came up today when Councilmember Smuckler said this seems like an odd one. I haven't seen one of these, and I said neither have I. So basically what we have in front of you is a review of a development entitlements and permits at 555 Main Street. On August 8th in 2005, the City Council approved a tract map, a conditional use permit, and a coastal development permit to subdivide the westernly lots into five parcels for a community housing project with some exceptions to common open space. Those five homes, if you go out there, they have been built. They're two-story homes that are out there that have been finished. On the other side of that property, on the main side, there was a proposed project to develop the easterly lots with commercial buildings with a specified mix of 25% for commercial and a total of 14 one-bedroom apartment units. So that all occurred in August of 2005. In August of 2006, the City Council approved an amendment to that easterly project by reducing the commercial space from 2,190 feet from the approved amount, which was 3,113 square feet. So about 1,000 square feet was lopped off of the commercial, which allowed for the approved units to go from 14 to 16 units. And as I said, the homes were built, but if you're out there, and I'm sure you drove by the lot at 555 Main Street, there's some retaining walls and there's grass around it and a fence, and that 16-unit apartment complex was never built. It was never finished. The property was foreclosed on and the bank took it over. From our files, what we do know what happened was is that we issued encroachment permits for the sewer and public improvements in December of 2005, and we gave a final map recordation in April of 2006. And all the way up until February 19, 2008, the final physical public improvements, you'll see the sidewalk around it and the gutter and all of those things were done at 555 Main as late as February of 2008. In July of 2009, the city staff sent a letter to the owner of the property at that time, which was now the bank, and informed them that their development permits had been declared inactive and therefore their entitlements had expired. And for the past year, from probably July 2009, July 2010, staff has met on probably three or four times with Coast National Bank to discuss these entitlement issues and to try to convince staff that they actually have not abandoned their project. And that gets to the language of our code section that the staff relied on in determining that the entitlements had expired on this property. And that's section 17.60.40 of your municipal code, which states, any use that was inaugurated but is subsequently vacated or abandoned in whole or part shall be deemed expired for that portion of use if abandoned for over 12 consecutive months. Our code does not define abandoned or vacated. I did look and have supplied you with a legal definition of abandonment for you, and that's activity, you know, grading, foundation, something being put in during that 12 period a month to us is how we've always determined whether the project's been abandoned and vacated. But again, that definition isn't anywhere in our code. We've never come across this situation. It is a unique property, and it does have on this property two deed restrictions to have two units on this property, no matter who develops it, whether it's Chelsea or whether the bank can give it. Even if you don't grant the entitlements, regardless of who comes in to build this property, there has to be two very low income units on this property, and that condition was part of the five residential homes that are already built. So with that, I've given you as part of your exhibits two letters from the attorney for Coast National Bank explaining their position that they have not been vacated and abandoned, and what they did during that period of time. I believe the applicant's attorney would tell you, you know, the reason why they're trying to do this is because with the entitlements and with the deed restrictions for very low income, you know, the property is tough to market and kind of has to be marketed as someone who's in the business for low income housing, and that with the entitlements, it makes it much more marketable for them to find that developer that will come in and do the project. Without it, and then we're back to square one, and they'd have to go through the process and pay all the fees and reinvent the wheel. And with that, I'll open it up for any questions. Mr. Livick's here, can ascertain some of them. But basically, it was to give the applicant also an appeal time to let you kind of vent this issue out and see what you wanted to do.
A question on the fees, which you just mentioned. Have all the development fees been paid on this? Were they paid up front?
No. On this one, they're paid at the time of pulling the building permits, I believe, is when you pay them.
At building permit and then at final building permit.
So then would the question be, would the fees from previously apply or the fees now? Is that one of the issues or not?
Yes, that's one of the issues. If they're entitled to their entitlements, then you would look at the impact fees that were in effect at 2005 compared to which ones are today. And rough calculations estimate, I'll let Mr. Livick, but we think they're in the neighborhood of maybe $50,000 to $80,000 that would be saved if the entitlements are still in effect.
Okay.
Yes. And excuse me.
Yeah, go ahead.
With the passage of our impact fee regulation back in 2007, we now have the residential impact fee, commercial impact fee, and the parks fee for projects that are not a subdivision. So looking at those fees, it's about $84,300 would be the approximate increase in fees. Some of the other, this is, if you look on, I think it's marked as Exhibit F in the staff report, a email from Dan Doris to the bank, gives a summary of fees. Those impact fees kind of in the middle of this table are the ones in question. Many of the other fees have not changed or have had minor increases, basically CPI increases would be the only increase in those other fees.
Okay, and then one other question about other potential places where this could be an issue. The lot on the corner of Main Street and Beach, has there been any activity on that? That was approved for a senior housing project, so I would assume that has expired. Had there been any correspondence or anything on that one? Nothing. I don't think so.
Nothing as long as I've been with the city.
And then the other one I would wonder about is the one in Quintana and Maine. Is that one considered expired because only half of it's been built?
And that one has not expired and is still active primarily because that property owner calls out for inspections and has done a little work out there, you'll see a little electrical work or something that has been done out there to keep that alive.
Okay.
So that one, they are doing the physical activity, although minor, and you might not even notice it, they are doing little things to it.
Excuse me, Mr. Schultz. On that project, the building approval will expire at the end of this year because it's gone through two building code change cycles. So for those new houses, they'll have to resubmit under the if they goes past this.
I think it's coming a combination of questions and comments, but I'll try.
Well,
to
before we get into comments, I was going to ask if Mr. Ohilski would like to come up and present. Okay. Another question, Noah? Okay. Mr. Ohilski, would you like to come and present your arguments, please?
Good evening. Marshall Ohilski. I'm the attorney representing Coast National Bank. This has been a point of discussion between the bank and the property owner in the city for quite a while. So I appreciate Rob giving us the opportunity to come to the city council and say basically this is a policy decision. You guys need to make the decision. I think that when you look at the definition of abandoned or vacated that is included in the staff report, it all revolves around the fact that there was an intent to abandon it. It has never been the previous owner's intent nor the bank's intent to abandon this. And if you go back through both of my letters, you'll see clearly that steps have been being taken all along to try to make the permit work in the changing economic conditions. So there was never any intent to walk away from this. In fact, improvements were actually built on this property as part of the five houses that were built to the west. And pragmatically, from our perspective, it's a single project because there were concessions on one property that went to the other property, and that's why we have the restriction requiring the two affordables on this property. So, we could have just, and I hate to say this, but we could have done what happened on Quintana Road. We could have gone out there every year and just put in a electrical meter or something just to continue making the process work because there is physical construction on the property. You can see the retaining walls out there now, but that was not the chosen approach that was taken. The approach was to try to work out something so we could come back with a project that was more financially feasible. My clients, they actually paid George Garcia, and you can see in my letter, they actually paid him to resubmit all the building plans and bring the plans up to the current code at that time. So clearly, that demonstrated their intent to proceed forward with the project. They were told at that time when they tried to resubmit those drawings that the entitlements were not valid any longer, so there was no, the city couldn't accept them. We'd have to go through the entitlement process. And I appreciate Mr. Leivick's optimism on the time frame for reprocessing this, but the original project took over a year to process just from the planning perspective. So that's my client's concern. Right now they have a nonprofit 501(c) that's prepared to work with them on this project. They're prepared to do an 18-unit, as I mentioned in my letter, an 18-unit affordable housing senior project on the site. If the entitlements are in place, what their intent to do, and they've already done this, we've done this through a few meetings already with city staff, to sit down and work out what project works best for the city. The first meeting we had with the city, we actually talked about the amount of money in the housing in lieu fees and actually asking for a permit fee waiver. And if you'll notice in my letter right now, we're not asking for that anymore. We're asking for loans. So they would ask for a loan from the housing in lieu fee to construct and operate, and then a loan for the permit fees. And that actually works better from them from a financing point of view, which I don't understand tax incentive financing, and I don't claim to, but that's what they decided worked better for them. So they're prepared to go forward. They would start tomorrow, quite frankly, if they could. They're that enthusiastic about the project. What our goal would be is, assuming that we can find the entitlements in place, that we would come back and start construction the beginning of next year. So we wouldn't have that, what I consider an eyesore out there. But basically, I think it goes back to the fact that both Michael Koss, who was the previous owner, and the bank just never had the intent to abandon. We've been moving forward, and I represented both Mr. Koss in the entitlement process, and I've represented the bank. And I think that we've been actively pursuing it. It's just, I think, everybody needs to understand the economic changes that occurred and what was financially, I mean, just look at the vacant properties that have been developed in town under the old economic situation. But we do have Chelsea, who is a reputable developer. They do, and if you read that, they've done over 25,000 affordable housing units, so they're available and ready to go. So part of the first hurdle we have to pass with them in order to keep them working on the project is to have the entitlements in place. So that's really what we're asking, is just for a policy decision that the abandonment or vacation of the permit requires, you know, an intent by the property owner. I would say in the alternative, if you don't want to go that way, in your code, you need to have some language that allows notice or requires notice to the property owner so they would have the opportunity to correct, just like you do in a building permit situation. Somebody gets a notice and an opportunity to correct, and I think that would be the exact same thing that would occur here, is you would get a notice saying your permit's going to expire in, you know, a month from now, you know, so you need to correct that situation by pursuing it or whatever you want to do. But I think right now there's our intent to keep working with the city to come up with a project that the city feels is best for them. Right now, the senior housing, the affordable senior housing, seems to be the project that most people feel is the best for the community, most viable because of the location, et cetera. So that's the one that we're pursuing right now. But we're not coming in and say we want our entitlements be determined in place and we're going to, you know, change our whole project to do this tomorrow, and we're not going through the review process or the advisory process. We are going to go through that. So that's our intent.
And thank you. And that was my second question. You have to come back anyways because it's not workforce housing anymore. Right. It's senior housing. So right. It will go through the public process.
Correct.
And in terms of direction, what I was thinking about was you have only two units, I think, that are at 30 or 40% of median income. And my question was, would you entertain having more at that level, particularly if you could reduce the size of the units to 400 square feet rather than 450, which would give you the two extra units that you were looking for and allow us to retain the commercial?
Chelsea, and I'm just speaking for Chelsea. Chelsea's not my client. I have to tell you that. The bank is. So, but I have been involved in a number of conference calls and meetings with Chelsea. Chelsea's expertise and intent is to develop all of the units as affordable housing. I mean, that's where they're going. That's how they get the tax incentive financing. So,
but there are different levels of affordability.
Right, and that's something that we would have
that
to
we would have to deal with them about.
The process,
okay,
right.
Yeah, cool.
Okay, and that leads to my question that there were a couple of commercial units on this. Is that included?
You know, the one, and I have to say this about that issue. That issue really has to go to the financing more than anything else, because the tax incentive financing is solely predicated on housing. It does not allow for financing of commercial, and that's an issue that Chelsea is working through right now. So whether or not we would ultimately have to come back with an amendment to the house, or pardon me, to the commercial or not, is something that we're not prepared to speak to. The entitlements as they read right now, and Rob can correct me if I'm wrong, but it allows for the conversion of that commercial over to residential if it's not leased out in 1 year, I believe. So there's a due diligence time period in there where it could not be rented out. It could be converted over automatically to residential. So, but I think as far as going through the process, I mean, having the entitlements obviously gets us a huge chunk of time that we save. So if there was or whatever modifications were requested in the project, depending on the scope of those, the city would have to determine what procedure that would go through, and obviously it's much more expedited than starting from scratch. So I don't know the answer to that. That's really a question as we proceed through the process.
Okay. Other questions? No? Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, and I appreciate your support on this.
Right. Probably would be a good idea. Yeah.
I would just like to declare ex parte. I did have a conversation with Mr. Ohilski earlier today.
Okay.
No, none.
Okay. All right, comments.
Well, you know, we always think about what kind of precedent things are going to set by what we do up here. But I don't have a problem with it simply because of the deed restriction and the accommodation for very low income. Lord knows we need places for people that are on very low incomes. So I would be agreeable to extending the permits and entitlements to a year.
Okay. No?
No, thank you. I also recognize the concern about precedent setting, and I'm glad your questions helped resolve that in my mind as much as seems possible with this project. And I also agree with Mr. Grantham's assessment of our needs for affordable housing. We all realize how far behind we are, and especially the lower brackets of the affordable housing requirements. And looking at the site, obviously it's something that would be of benefit for us to see improved and put into use. And that's another attraction to me to help this project move forward. At the same time, I see that there is, if we were to grant the entitlements, well, that's of significant value, not only the cost, the direct cost there, but just the time itself of being able to get the project started sooner rather than later. And I know it's not as much a part of our conversation tonight, but I would really hope if we do extend this, that through the conversations with our staff and the applicant, that we could identify a return and reinvestment on a good portion of those savings back into the project to increase its value, whether it's something like Ms. Winholt suggested with extended and increased affordable units at a lower level. Another thought that I have is
delayed, I should say, but it seems like it literally in the 11th month, so in the 11th hour, there is some documentation that they save themselves each year along the way. And so the fact that the city had declared it abandoned because of inactivity and without a definition, then I'm comfortable saying that we're within our requirements, actually, and we're not making it an exception, because I would not want to make that kind of declaration. So in light of the phone calls and the bank getting involved and other things along the way, I agree that the intent has always been there.
I think that I would also agree with you very strongly on that.
Great. So my question to you, Madam Mayor, is once we vote on this, assuming that we vote that the entitlement is still in place, I'd like to have a discussion and know how council's input can be relayed through staff or to staff and to the applicant along with that. And I just want to make sure I say that after we have our
on
vote.
The project itself?
Yes.
I mean, because the project review would certainly be the normal.
It would be, procedure. But I want them to know ahead of time where I'm going to come from. This is a project we've already seen. We already approved it. And they're making changes that are significant, and I'd like them to know that they're headed in the way that I can approve it.
Is that something that we can do tonight as part of our discussion? Or?
Certainly. And it seems you're going towards the entitlements. I just wanted to clarify, especially with Councilmember Smucklers and both your comments, is this. If, in fact, you do find that they're still entitled to entitlements, one scenario is this project just gets built exactly the way it is on paper. They come forward with plans that meet the building code, and it's never seen again by you or really staff. It's just from the building permit standpoint. In that sense, there wouldn't be any green features. It's just exactly how they said it was going to be built. It would have its two lower income, and it'd be a workhouse for us, and it'd have the commercial space. If, in fact, they begin to tinker with the actual development process of it, the commercial space, the number of units, the parking, or anything like that, then it goes back to the Planning Commission for that type of approval. There's a third scenario where actually, and it's a combination of one or two, is where, as you can see from Chelsea, they're going to be asking for affordable housing funds or other impact fees waivers or other permit fees waivers, and then that would come to you also, which would be able to, for you to tackle any of your green concerns or affordable housing or the size of the units. Even if they don't want to change it, you certainly could put conditions on this project because they want to use your affordable housing funds. So with that, there's three scenarios. I just want to make certain there's one where, you know, even if you did want to make changes to it, if you do grant the entitlements, there wouldn't be any of that process.
Do we have to choose tonight, or do we just grant the entitlements?
You're either granting the entitlements or not. Okay. And from what I understand, though, It's the second and third that's going to happen. You know, this property is trying to be marketed to a nonprofit corporation that is looking for help from our affordable housing fund and also has some issues. So if you want to weigh in on the commercial standpoint or on the size of the units or whether senior housing is just as good as workhouse housing, I don't think staff has any problem with hearing that after the motion is made.
Okay. All right. Well, I agree that I was excited when I saw this. Oh my gosh, we're going to get something on that lot. Hallelujah. And I do believe that, and perhaps this is where the policy ought to be specified here, is that we establish some sort of criteria for what keeps a project alive. And I think that keeping it alive, especially when it's a financing situation, bankruptcy, all of that, that correspondence should be sufficient, because at this point it's all they've been able to do. To go and stick a shovel in the ground once a year seems kind of pointless if they don't really have something to do it for. And they did do the retaining wall. That's the one thing we can all see of that project. So I think that that's something that we should somehow establish out of this discussion. But I agree. I think we should extend the entitlements to get this kind of a project. It would be such a boon and an advantage to our community. That and I don't see it. I think the precedent should be established that correspondence would keep a project alive, as long as it's not just a hello, how are you correspondence. It's got to be obvious that there has been some attempt to keep moving forward. So anyway, that's my feeling on it. So I'll entertain a motion, and then we'll talk about some requirements that we'd like to see.
Is there anything that we need to do to actually recognize the value of the entitlements at this point, if we were to move forward there, or does that just become something that we realize happened?
But maybe we could work towards some clarification on abandonment, requesting extensions to their development activity, engage the city in their process also, not sort of work behind closed doors.
Mm-hmm.
They think they haven't abandoned it, but we have no idea what's happened with the project.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a different issue. Okay. Second, discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay, then we did want to, and I don't know, can Carla come back for this part where we're just talking about the project? Or should she stay? I'm getting it okay first, Carla, just a minute. No, he decided you can't.
Yeah, better safe than sorry.
Not yet.
Since we don't know who the applicant is, and I mean, if the property sells to Chelsea, then obviously she could, but I think for the time being, we'll take the discussion and any suggestions you have to staff without her.
Okay. All right, so things that we would like to have looked at in this project when it comes back. Betty?
I would like to see the size of the units reduced to 400 square feet. That would allow two more units, which would be 18. I'd like the retention of the commercial, and I would, if that needs to be separated out from Chelsea and they need to sublet that to somebody else to develop, that's fine. But I think it's important, as in North Moore Bay and South Moore Bay, we need to retain that commercial area. And that is across the street from a motel. It is next door to a business complex. And so it's not like there's leapfrogging that's happening here. So the commercial would be, and it could be related maybe in some way to seniors.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah. If they could put in their own thrift shop or something like that, that would be there.
Where
it would be a commercial space.
Kinds of equipment that old people buy, soda shop.
Or maybe a business that a senior wants to.
Right. There you go, something like that. Yeah. Exactly. So I'm very strong about the commercial. And I'd like to see more low income, the very low, the 30 to 40%, if that's possible. And I know that we've already given benefit for parking. I don't know if that's another thing we can give up again, because I don't remember where it's at, but it may already be too low. But at least check into that. What else? Or they could put in those little carts, you know?
Well, I know I think in the original plan there was at least one handicap accessible. So perhaps
That would be a code requirement. Uh, we We don't.
No,
really
I'm not
have
talking about the parking.
Ability.
I'm talking about the
oh
the
units had some handicap.
Yeah.
In them.
So I would like to see as many as possible be, you know, if we could have a couple of handicap units, that would be good too. Rick? Noah?
Yeah, I'll just reiterate the water resources and basic green building practices as much as possible be incorporated. And I also support the very low income bracket. If anything that we can do to increase the number of units there would be appreciated.
Yeah, and I again want to say about the commercial, I understand what you're saying about the commercial. I'm not sure I agree, although I understand the value of keeping Main Street in the loop with commercial. But I would hope that perhaps they could work out something where it would be something that's related to the residents of the area, a business that could be run by them or supported by them or that they would use. So if that's a possibility and that makes it easier to get the financing for it.
Well, and this is mixed-use area, and so there should be commercial, and it's already down to 17%.
Right.
So I think it's real critical.
Yeah, no, another thing, because of the location, the proximity to downtown, it seems like it lends itself very well to alternative transportation.
Yes.
And it would be interesting to explore some options that related to the fun ride concept, in regards to their parking and so on. And
I was half serious about the little golf carts.
Oh, yeah, me too. I think that's a really good idea and would be perhaps seen as value for the residents there.
Mm-hmm. That they could share and run into the grocery store.
Sure. Maybe we're getting a little too into it.
Are those legal on public streets? I'm not sure that's legal on public streets.
I don't know. They're down there all the
time. Some of them, but they have to have certain...
And then do we want to talk about entitlement suggestions here as well, about whether they should go with the old fees or new fees, or it doesn't matter, or if we're...
Actually, that was a question I had with our Green Building Incentive Program. Is there any sort of correlation or relationship that they could qualify for if they do introduce some of those components?
Let me clarify the way I heard the approval of the entitlements is that you vested them to the old fees.
Right. Yes.
So they are not subject to our new impact fees, which would be consistent with all projects when you approve the impact fees. All
other ones. At your July 15th JPA meeting, the Morro Bay City Council took action and approved the award of a contract for project manager services for the upgrade of the Morro Bay treatment plant. At that meeting, present was Mayor Peters and Councilmember Grantham, and Councilmember Winholtz was also present at the meeting. Councilmember Borchard participated in the meeting by telephone. That is allowed under the Brown Act. We've done it on a couple other occasions. The requirements for that is just that you post that notice at the city of the telephonic appearance, provide the address for that, and then wherever that council member is at also has to make that site available for anybody that wants to participate at the other location. So we did that and believed we had a quorum. We even had a quorum at the meeting at that particular time when the meeting started. The Brown Act does state, though, that in regard to those telephonic appearances, though, is that you've got to have a quorum of the members of the legislative body present within the boundaries of the territory. So at the meeting on July 15th, when we began the meeting, we had three members present and had a quorum there, and we had one participating by telephone at another location. And I would mention that Council Member Smuckler was not there because he had a previous scheduled vacation. So during the meeting at this project manager discussion, Council Member Winholtz read a prepared statement that's in the staff report, and then after that time, she left the meeting before the vote or even before the motion and then was made and second, and before that she left the meeting. The motion passed 3-0 with Council Member Borchard voting by telephone. At that time, I thought that was acceptable because I had forgot about this Brown Act exception that required a quorum to be present at the actual meeting. And so when Council Member Winholtz left, there's a question of whether the quorum was lost An interesting wrinkle in that on quorums is in Robert's Rules of Order. A quorum is established by the chair or by the mayor. And if it's lost during the meeting, a point of order is supposed to be raised either by the chair or by one of the other members. That was not done. So a question is did it fail on its own? Was raised, and then even to make things a little quirkier, is we do have in our policies and procedures that a council member shall vote, a seated member shall vote, and if they do not, it will be construed as an affirmative vote, which raised a question of whether that applied to council member Winholtz, although based on her statement, that certainly was never her intent to vote for this, and that's her reason for leaving. And so I bring it back to you. It wasn't raised by any member of the public. It wasn't raised by any council member. It was raised by myself after looking at it over and thought, you know, the best way to do this is just to bring it back to your council member to your meeting and have a revote affirmation so it doesn't be brought up. And it also is a lesson that we've learned that we still – if we do a telephonic appearance, we've got to have a quorum of at least three here at the meeting.
I have another wrinkle.
Okay.
Mr. Schultz, I've been pondering on this as well. And does the JPA operate under Robert's rules? And if it does, then do our policies and procedures not apply? Or because we vote separately at the JPA, do we operate by our rules and Cayucos operates by their rules?
Yeah, the reason
I'm asking is that Roberts allows for abstaining votes, and our policies and procedures, as you said, do not.
Yeah, when we use JPA, and we have to remember that it's not a joint powers authority; it's just two separate bodies getting together under a joint powers agreement. Mm-hmm. So you're still bound by the Brown Act, but you would be bound by your policies and procedures. Each board acts independently. That's why there's separate motions done for each board. So
to clarify, we bring our own rules to the meeting, and they do it their way, and we
correct.
Do it ours.
Correct.
Okay.
Okay. Any other questions or discussion?
Actually, a question is, do at this point are questions regarding the contract appropriate, or is that just kind of already by us? It's more of a clarification type of a question regarding the contract and the scope of work for the project manager.
You will be reaffirming it, so any discussion that if you did want to have on the actual awarding of the contract, you certainly could. I mean, if the council, in fact, changes their vote and does not award this contract, then the first thing we'd have to do is notify Cayucos and So what you're saying is the contract with Dennis Delzite has nothing at all in it regarding reviewing PERC's DR when it comes in. And if it doesn't, then yes, we'd have to come back to the board for an amendment to their contract to review that and have the council weigh in on whether to add that to their contract.
Yes, as far as I understood at the board meeting, we discussed a peer review from another
right.
consultant mm-hmm. to separate that out and make sure it was a third party that wasn't so entwined with one aspect of the project or another.
That's
but I just
correct.
Wanted to confirm that.
That's correct.
And so if there was a proposal to ask the project manager to provide an evaluation, that would have to come from the board itself, and that discussion would take place at a board meeting. Okay. That was my only question.
Okay. I had one question, and that's at the meeting, the contract, I believe I'm remembering correctly, Mr. Keough said had not really been settled yet because I had raised the issue about his proposal being over the ceiling that the board had set, and has that been settled yet?
I'm not sure on the scope-wise. We know for sure he can't exceed $250,000 without coming back to you. So, I mean, that's the issue right now is $250,000. What the actual task item are, I'm not sure where Bruce Keough is on that because I'm not involved. I was involved with the contract language, and we worked out the contract language for indemnification issues, and they sign the language that the city has always used and convince their insurance carrier that's the language that has to be used. But as far as getting him from 263 down to 250 and what items were not included or were included, I left that up to the technical people.
Yes, that was a time when I was out of the office, so I don't have details of what happened with the contract, but there was agreement that the cost not to exceed would be set at $250,000. You have to remember that with a professional services contract, those are estimates of hours and times, so not firm bid like with a construction contract. So it's basically a fee for service. He gives us estimates what he thinks it would cost. It's could be high, could be low. So as we get probably closer to the middle of the contract, we'll actually know where we are as far as the project goes.
Well, that's interesting because I remember Mr. Ents in particular saying the word ceiling, you know, of 250. So is that inappropriate language because that is never going to be true?
The contract says a cost not to exceed $250,000 without prior written approval.
So it has the clause on it.
It has the clause in the contract on there. I guess there is the possibility that $250,000 will not bring us to the end of the contract, but we'll know that far before we get. We're not going to come to you right at the end and say we need $60,000 more for this last week. Mm-hmm. That wouldn't serve us very well, mm-hmm. nor the board, nor council. We'll know, you know, closer probably to the middle of the contract, how much they're expending mm-hmm. on these different tasks, whether we're saving money on some tasks. We can always reduce their scope, take some of that back in-house if it's taking too long.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, my understanding when we originally talked about this, because I was not supportive of the $250,000, was that it would be from $150,000 to $250,000. So I would hope at no point in time we would exceed that amount, and that when staff brought those figures to us, that would have been reviewing the scope of work that would have fit in to take us to the end of the project. That was my understanding, was that this would take us to the end of the project for $150,000 to $250,000. So I would really hope that when that's done, we get all the way to the end with it.
I believe that Mr. Delzite thinks we will, and staff has that belief also, that we can do this project management for under the specified amount.
And I think there'll be quite a bit of oversight by council and Cayucas in that we will have our monthly JPA meetings, and in that monthly JPA meeting will be in a monthly report by him with his invoice that you can see to see what we're spending per that month.
Okay. I move that we reaffirm the action taken at the Joint Powers Agreement on July 15th and reapprove the award of a contract to Dennis Delzite for project management services for the upgrade of the Morobe Cayucas Wastewater Treatment Plant.
I have some comment.
Discussion.
I'd like to respond to the public comment that was made earlier this evening.
At the JPA's insistence, the members here, we held that meeting because Ms. Wenholtz wasn't available the following week. Therefore, I chose to take time out of my vacation to Skype in on my expense, not the city's expense, just for clarification, my $1.20. And it is not the first time that it's been done. Mr. Smuckler phoned in, tried to Skype in for a joint Planning Commission Council meeting. My understanding is that Mr. Pask has done it before for Major Q, and Planning Commission Commissioner Lucas would have if he weren't in Europe. So just to clear that up, it's not the first time, and it's not so uncommon. I felt it was important enough to participate in the meeting. That's why I chose to do it. And so, you know, all the misnomers out there based on the newspaper article or the comments that were made, just for the record, that was why I chose to participate in the meeting. So, thank you.
Okay.
And I do have some comments as well. I'll be voting no on this, not because of the quality of the project manager selection, but because of the process, as Ms. Winholtz pointed out. I, from our meetings and experiencing two RFP processes with this project, the first being the design process with MWH, and feeling like there was certainly not enough information and choice given to the board for that process. We talked about that, and I had hopes that the project manager RFP process was going to come back with more information and include a choice for our board. Because of information that we received at the previous meeting before the special meeting, it became clear that there was no choice and that our special meeting was largely ceremonial to basically approve staff's recommendation with no alternatives presented. And therefore, I felt like we didn't have a choice. We weren't representing the public at that point, and I think it's essential that a project this size that we are given choices and can have that sort of an input. So not only will I vote no tonight, but I would like to bring forward a future agenda item that actually refines our RFP process and puts together more formal language about how an RFP process can be brought forward. I think we've seen that we have some glitches in that, and if we were to formalize it, it would hopefully keep that from happening in the future. So I think we can have that conversation during the future agenda items. But basically, it would be something that I think the city attorney is prepared to put together for us for our review as far as a formal RFP process goes.
Okay. I'm going to respond then to those comments. I don't agree that this was not done properly. I think it was done absolutely properly. There are certain things that we as a council have to make decisions on. And this is something that we encounter a lot with the community. They elect us to make decisions, and then sometimes they don't trust us to do it, and they want to micromanage us. And it's, you know, human nature, I guess. But we as a council, we have a staff, and they are entrusted to do their jobs. And to say that I am a better judge of who would be a better project manager for a wastewater treatment plant is just not true. I don't have the engineering knowledge. I don't have the knowledge about the treatment plant process and what they're going through in this whole construction job. And I don't think that any one of us does. And I think that there is where you have to, as council members, rely on the quality of your staff and their education and their experience and their intelligence and their concern for the city, because we're all in this together. We're not working against each other. So I think that the process was done properly, and I support it.
I'd like to respond to that. Okay. We obviously do have a well-qualified staff, and we're paying top dollar for consultants to augment that staff for a major project. And as a board, we're here to represent the public and the citizens and to soften or bring a public and citizen element to a project that's being guided and defined by professionals. But again, this project long-term is here for the citizens, not those professionals in the ultimate conclusion of the project. And if we don't have any sort of influence, as basically was laid out in the RFP process and discussed at the previous meeting before the special meeting by the board, we're not fulfilling our obligations as representatives of that public. So I disagree with you. I think it's essential that we bring that element to the table, and many times we will agree with our staff, but there's got to be some sort of opportunity for us to bring up concepts or perspectives that might not be represented by one perspective.
Well, and there was the opportunity to be part of those interviews, and in fact, I know Ms. Winholtz did, I don't know if you did also, and it seems to me that if there was a concern with the choice, that at the meeting,
and if you have a compelling reason that we shouldn't have selected that project manager and should have gone with the other project manager, that you had that opportunity. At that point in time, it wasn't ceremonial. It was, you know.
But you had no knowledge of who the other people were. I was at the interviews, and I could see them, and I could go and read the RFPs, but I dare say, did any of us go and read the other applications? So even though I could have presented to you maybe this person or this person,
it would have meant nothing because you had no background. And that's why I think it's a fallacy to say we don't have the expertise to choose. I absolutely assume and trust that these people would not bring us people who are unqualified. That this company versus this company, both of them have to be qualified before they would bring them to me. And that then we get to choose based on the nuances. You know, do they get along with our personality? Do they get along? Will they bring the JPA and the city of Morro Bay together? That was supposed to be one of the tasks of the PM, of the project manager. So we have to have that choice in whatever contract it is. And that's critical for that input. And so I totally back what Mr. Smuckler is saying.
Did you have anything to add, Rick?
Well, you know, I heard somebody say, I forget who it was, that what we did really didn't reflect the wishes of the constituency. But I guess that's all in who you talk to, because I get a lot of people calling me and talking to me and saying, you know, keep this thing going. I want to pay a reasonable rate. I don't want to be... I watch the county meetings about the Los Osos sewer, and the same people that tried to put this thing off and complained about everything are crying now about how much it's going to cost. Well, guess whose fault that is? I'm not going to put our ratepayers in that position. If I'm playing the game and the game doesn't go my way, I can't take my ball and go home. I've got a responsibility to be here, fight for what I feel is right, and if I don't get it, I don't get it. But I have that responsibility to the constituents, and that's a sacred responsibility.
And what I'm saying, Mr. Grantham, is if you had an alternative opinion in the process as we had it laid out, it would have been almost impossible to argue and bring a different choice to the board the way it was presented. There was no information presented publicly that would have allowed you to actually have an alternative opinion that was arguable in the public.
Some of the things
meetings
that won me over about this individual was the fact that he's from this area, he's done the same type of work here. He's
Mr. Grantham, I don't want to interrupt you.
Well, let me finish.
This isn't about the quality of the project
budget
manager.
He's done a wonderful job, and I feel we're very, very happy to get him. And I know a little bit about sewers now, a heck of a lot more than I used to, but let me tell you, there's a lot of people on our staff that know a heck of a lot more about it than I do. And I trust their wisdom, I trust their judgment, and I certainly support hiring Mr. Delzite to be the manager of this project.
And I'm not making any comments about the quality of the project manager selection. My comments are based on the process.
Okay. All right. We have a motion on the table. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Okay. 3-2. Smuckler and Winholz opposed. Okay. Moving along. D4, designation of a voting delegate for the 2010 League of California Cities Conference. Who's presenting this one? It's got Bridget's name on it. Well, Bridget. I think Rob is our chosen delegate. So,
Bridget was hoping she wasn't going to present. Basically, we're looking for it, so I'll take it over.
I won't be there. I won't be there that late on Friday. So
you won't?
No.
Oh my goodness. Okay. Anybody else want to go?
Isn't this just a formality of just listing somebody as we did last year?
Mm-hmm.
Is that my understanding?
Right.
Rob
was the one last year. Okay. Well, I'll take it then. What this is the annual league meeting, and they always come up with certain resolutions that they want the cities to approve and vote on, and there is not anything as crucial as there have been previous times. I think Prop 1A was one of the ones that I was there to vote for. And having looked through these, they're all fairly mild. So I guess it doesn't matter if we have a voting delegate unless one of you wants to go.
Madam Mayor, does it cost for us to attend this meeting? It looked like it cost several hundred. And
yes, it does.
I'd like us to, and I'll make this a future agenda item when it's appropriate, that we send the league a letter and say, if you want us to participate, make it a no-cost meeting.
Yeah.
Because if they really want our input, they wouldn't be charging us $240.
And that's for one day.
And that's just for
that.
Exactly.
For the whole
and I don't think that's helpful.
Okay.
So
meetings, and I brought it up to our chief of police, and I believe we're going to do a presentation. I got permission from the Oprah show to run the whole piece without commercials, obviously, and so I think we're going to do a presentation at PWEB so that it can be aired on AGP and everybody gets a chance to see it. I'm also going to try and take it to the high school and see if I can do an assembly there. We were going to try and do a county-wide campaign, but we're into campaign season right now, so that isn't happening. We'll see where this goes individually with the cities. I gave each of the mayors the information on it, and with the league supporting it as well, I think it is an issue that's going to be discussed quite a bit. If they want to go for something as a group next year, I'd be happy to still be involved in that, even though I won't be in office. But it is a really important item and will be looked at and talked about some more in Morro Bay.
Could you get it on Channel 2?
Very possibly. I don't know. I've got to see. I got permission to do it through a city meeting and at a high school auditorium. We can't distribute it. We can't sell it, obviously. So we've got to be careful on where it goes. So I'm not sure. I'll have to find out. Anyway, so we're determined that we don't need a designate for the league, and so that makes this item moot. But, Rob, you're going to be there for a little while at the conference? Okay. So if anything urgent comes up, you can let us know. All right. Given that, declaration of future agenda items?
I have a number.
Okay.
One would be that we get a definition for
abandonment.
Thank you for that word.
Okay. Okay.
I'm serious about a letter to the league, and I'd be glad to write it regarding their annual meetings.
Okay.
And did we have do we have support on abandonment?
Well, I was going to ask on that one for a definition. Is that something that we actually need to bring back for discussion, or is that something that you could just put together and
We'd want to do an ordinance change if we're actually going to change that. And so if there's enough council members, we'd put it on the future agenda item. I'm not saying when we'd be able to get to it, but at least it'd be a tracking item for something
and
that needs to be addressed.
Should that go through the planning commission first, or comes
probably go through the planning commission?
Okay, so why don't we have that be the motion that it be sent to the planning commission for?
Okay,
look at that. Okay, yes, there's support for that. And there's our planning commission chair back there.
And okay. Then would there be agreement that I could bring forward a letter to the league concerning their costs for the annual meeting?
I'm a little concerned about that just because I know the league is really having a hard time financially and looking for support rather than...
But does it cost $240 per person to rent a room for 2 hours?
No. I wouldn't think so.
And if their true intent is to get our feedback.
Well, okay.
It could be a letter of solicitation.
If it's a letter just saying that, you know, we would like to participate in the vote but not to have to pay $200 to do that I'd go along with. Mm-hmm. Everybody agree with that?
Okay. I would like to talk about this climate change and climate adaptation at our joint meeting. Could I get that on the agenda for November?
Okay. Everybody okay with that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'd like to...
Councilmember Reynolds, can we just go back? I just want to make sure we're clear. So that's going to be a joint meeting topic and...
With the Planning Commission.
Information provided by...
Well, I would actually see it more than... It needs to be pretty informational. Mr. Lucas was there. The two city planners were there. I think that needs to be a formal presentation. It's kind of involved. So maybe that would end up taking 30 minutes of our time.
Well, that's a lot in that joint.
But it's something that feeds into what state requirements are going to be asking us to do, and we have to be looking at it anyways.
Okay. So
unless there are other topics that are hot right now.
So you want staff to do the presentation. Is that going to work?
I'd be glad to work with them. I think Mr. Lucas would work with Ms. Wald.
Yes, I think... the NOAA presentation, we can summarize that meeting along with other information that were this is information that we have to get into our environmental documents. So we're getting up to speed with this climate change information.
Because I think we need to be educated. The Planning Commission needs to be educated on expectations, so we'll be ready for
Thank
it.
Thank you.
As succinct as possible.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know how to do this, if it's just an administrative thing or if it needs to be formal, but I'd like to see every contract come to closed session before it comes to open session and to formalize that. I know we have kind of an informal...
That's we can put into a policy probably would be best. Is we've got the section on negotiations in closed session. And what I believe you're asking for is to make certain that you see the lease... Mm-hmm. The 2 weeks prior to when we actually go to open session for it, so you've got you've got it before. Many times in closed session, we just give you the either a thumbnail of it or the major terms, but you want to see the actual agreement in closed session also.
Because that's always get it subsequently anyways, or at least we do. Like if we do a contract
always
with fire
or
police, but maybe it's good to see it beforehand.
Okay,
do we have council agreement on that?
What I would suggest we do is look at our harbor management policy and actually put language in that so future councils know. I would say that it might not be definitive policy because sometimes, you know, the dynamics of a contract and lease are changing, and sometimes we don't always get it to you. And they need to be approved right away, you know. So, I mean, it's something we can shoot for, but knowing also on time frames, sometimes it doesn't always happen that way.
That's what I was going to ask. What's that going to add to the time?
It could be the 2 weeks. It could be up to the two-week period.
But we had a discussion of the library anyways. We just didn't have the physical document. And so I think I think that staff is good about getting it to us ahead of time, but we need to have something that we can read, not just hear the main ideas. Because what may be important to them is not what's important to me.
Okay. So we have agreement on that? Okay. Reluctant, but yeah. Anything else?
And then I have a question for Mr. Schultz, another technical thing, quirky thing. For open session, it only requires two people to get something on the agenda, not three. And that's even one person to get something on the agenda? We have to have one other agreement?
No. One can put it on if they do all the work. Two can put it on but still have to do the work.
Okay.
When you get a majority is when staff begins
to do the
report.
Work. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and I don't remember seeing in policies and procedures then how that relates to closed session. So you've been telling us it takes three, but if it takes less to come to open, can we have less come to closed?
Certainly, if council wanted to make that a policy, that anybody could call a closed session.
Well, I think we would want two, like we do in, or what I was assuming was two in open session. But I don't think we even have a written policy at this point, do we?
As to closed session, no.
Then I'd like to, and if that needs to be put into a policy, then I'd like that come back. At the same time, I guess that's what I'm looking for.
What? I'm confused what you're looking for.
A policy in our policies and procedures manual that would explain how closed sessions are called.
Mm-hmm. All right. So just an explanation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Are we in agreement?
And now since we don't have a policy right now, I'm going to ask the council again if we could have a closed session to do an evaluation on the city manager.
That's not on our agenda.
I'm bringing it up as an agenda item, future agenda item for 2 weeks from now. Because I sent that over the email over the week, and we didn't get three as the city attorney requested that we have, and I'm suggesting since there's no policy, we don't need to have three for that to happen.
Are you asking for a formal evaluation like we do annually, or more of a discussion?
A discussion of recent events.
So I'd support that.
I'm sorry. My understanding when we had things come before, because when I asked about a closed session item, I had to have consensus. So I'm not understanding how that we don't have to have three now. I don't.
for closed session?
Yes.
It currently is. That's the current policy, even though it's not written, requires a majority of council to call a closed session item.
Okay. I'm not in a favor.
Nor am I.
Rick?
No.
Okay.
So once we get this policy in line, then that changes
if the council
the statement
approves
that
the
you're
policy.
Making.
The policy that I will bring back, and you're certainly welcome to bring other ones, though, would be our current practice, which would be closed session requires a majority of council to call.
Okay. So if it's a current practice, that's not saying that we can't change the practice right now and go with two people if the majority wanted to do that. But you're saying we're going to bring that back as a policy. I'm confusing it. I got it. I've got it on the agenda.
Okay. Rick, any future agenda items? Noah?
Yeah, I have a number of them. One is in relation to the Chamber of Commerce and the decisions there, the transition that they're making. I've been getting some feedback, interest from the public.
At the next meeting.
That sounds good to me.
Okay, they can just start off the meeting with that.
Okay.
We can invite them to do that.
Okay, great.
Okay.
The next is in relation to our transit and the recent switch to the FlexFix route. We're getting some comments about that transition, and seems like because it has been a very significant change with the transition away from Dial-A-Ride, I think it'd be prudent for us to have at least a PWAB level, perhaps, a public hearing to give people the opportunity to express their thankfulness for the new system, comments about the new system, express any gaps that they're seeing. Overall, it might be helpful just to give them that opportunity at this point before it gets much further down the road. It seems like we have enough time now to get a little bit of a track record and feel it out. So I think it might be good to at least go to the PWAB level to give that opportunity.
How would we get them there? Because these are people that don't have their own transportation.
Well, that's true.
And it's at night.
Well, what the comment we have, Ms. Peters, you had contacted Janine Burlingame, right. And Janine's accepting comments now, conglomerating comments from people. So if they want to submit those comments directly to Janine to be relayed into the public hearing, that seems like that would be an alternative for someone that couldn't attend.
Right. Yeah. I think the concern was they were getting a lot of comments at the senior center too, and we wanted to have a city person who was the receiver of the comments, pro and con, and problems and all of that. So Janine is it. Is this something that PWAB could look at those comments and consider? Do you think, Rob? Or?
Yeah, it would be an item that would be within the purview of the Public Works Advisory Board, and they could. Receive comments via mail, email, or at the meeting, and then discuss. Janine could give a brief presentation on the status of the transition, what's worked, what hasn't worked, and then discussion, forward that discussion to City Council, perhaps a future City Council item.
Okay. And just reiterate, too, how it works, because a lot of people, I think it's just confusion. So so that's probably a good thing. Is everybody in agreement with that? Okay. Yes.
Okay. The next one is in relation to some emails that were going back and forth and some of the work with trees. Currently, the Citizens Tree Committee and staff and our boards have been updating a landmark tree concept and also the city's master tree list. Something that we had on hold to start to wade into was an actual tree ordinance that would give us more concrete information about our tree policy for the city instead of what we have now, which are guidelines, which seem to end up causing a lot of confusion one way or the other. And so the idea was to wait to start to develop tree ordinance policy until the city of San Luis had finished updating theirs, which is pretty extensive, and they've gone through that process now and finished their update, which was just approved in the last couple of months. So I would like us to ask Mr. Livick to actually take a look at that ordinance and begin the process of of developing and drafting a ordinance for the city of Morro Bay, tree ordinance.
Could that be PWEB instead of or in conjunction with Mr. Leibich?
I would be open to any the best process that Mr. Leibich sees fit for that work.
How does that look time-wise?
Well, if I may weigh in, as a future agenda item, then we should bring back for Mr. Leibich just that ordinance to see if that's the direction you want to head in before we go down the path of developing a private tree ordinance that, you know, I don't know if there's support for. So that'd be the first, is just maybe to gather that information and bring it back to you in an informational package, and then for you to decide whether you want it to go to PWEB or what staff direction would be
developing. That's what I'm suggesting.
All right. And how can you do that report?
I would prefer if Mr. Leibich put together that report because, really, I think he would be the one that would be working with it most closely.
Okay.
And we staff can do that. I mean, that's just a short staff report on their process. And along with that, I've got a few other private tree ordinances collected that we can provide all that information for you, and then just see if that's where a direction you want to go.
Great.
Okay.
Could you give us a status on where the tree list and the landmark tree is? It's been through PWEB. It's been through planning. When will it come to us?
The a lot of community, you know, love for our urban forests, so they don't go down lightly, I guess, is what I want to say. So I would suggest that gets rolled into the tree ordinance, and we present a fully developed tree ordinance to council if you so desire that.
What's the timing on something like that? I mean, how many? It's got to be months.
Years.
Well,
I really want that definition brought forward. I really do, with or without a tree ordinance. Just to have it even for public trees, because who knows when.
And that's where it belongs at this point in time. Although it's been years, it's because the private tree ordinance has never survived a first and second reading here. And so if you want to put in and look at the street trees and you want to put a landmark definition, it belongs in the time being in our public tree policy. As Rob says, there is a process already that's difficult to take down city trees, but if you want to put another one on the definition of landmark trees, understanding that it's in your public trees we're talking about, you certainly could do that now. And that issue is not as controversial as the issue of landmark trees and declaring that on private property and doing a private tree ordinance, which has been started installed on various occasions. So I think the first thing to do is if you want the landmark tree to come forward or the street trees, that's going to Planning Commission, and that discussion needs to be done, but only as it discusses public trees. Mm-hmm. And then if you want the separate one to go forward, that's private tree ordinance, and we can bring that just to council to see if there's enough a majority to want to delve into that, which can take a while to develop that so the community buys into it.
And Mr. Leibich, just to explain my frustration, is that I'm real concerned about trees that are dying in town, even on public property, and particularly downtown. We have not decided what's going to happen to those trees and what kind of character we want downtown, and they're being replaced without any official notice. And so that's where I'm coming from.
Yeah, that the existing policy is when you replace a tree, you pick one from our street tree list. And we have a multitude of trees on our street tree list. And for a urban forest viability, you don't want one species in a downtown, because when they do start to die off, like with the ficus in San Luis Obispo, as those ficus die off, they're all planted at the same time. They all are getting the same diseases, and they're all tending to die about at the same time. So you want some sort of variety with your your urban forest. You want some of that diversity with your urban forest.
And something that you don't slip on.
Yeah.
Well, and it's in conjunction with the visioning process. You know, how do we want our downtown to look?
Yeah.
And so that whole thing's real important to me.
And I would like to engage our new maintenance section with this, too. Because they're going to be responsible for overseeing our urban forest. So it's not just me anymore. It's Mr. Woods and Mr. Wilcox that are also involved in this. So, but the landmark tree, I think the tree committee did a great job of fleshing out the issues, gave us some great criteria. It just needs to be morphed into code language. So government ease, it needs to be put into so we can get it into our code.
So it hasn't been to PWAB yet?
It has been to PWAB, and it has been to Planning Commission.
Oh, it has been to Planning.
And we did take public input, and the tree committee did a great job of hearing that public input and modifying their language.
Ms. Luker, then, could we bring the tree list and the definition of landmark sometime in September?
It sounds like we can. The tree list is going to PC at the next meeting, so that sounds like
correct.
September might work for both those. Bring them at the same time?
Yeah, I'd suggest we bring them at the same time.
Okay. All right. Carla, anything?
Oh, actually, I had. Sorry. Okay, so next one's just a question for the rest of the council. As I organize these tours of Pismo and Santa Paula, do you have any requests as far as general days of the week or times that you think would give you a better chance as I start to make these phone calls about your ability to make the tour as well? If there's something
just
that
depends on the week, you know.
Yeah,
I've been to both places already.
Yeah, Rick doesn't need to go. Weekends are better for me, but if it's before the school starts, I could go anytime.
Okay.
If it's after the 24th, I'll make that commitment ahead of time and just not. I'll work around it.
Okay.
Weekends are out for me.
Out. Well, what about during the week? What's generally
to ask the make statements or
you're better off doing it in twos.
Okay.
Even two vehicles.
Even no, it's, the tour itself. Okay.
Even if it's noticed.
You're leaving the jurisdiction. I mean, I could research it on those times, and we probably couldn't do the notice if we provided transportation for anybody that wanted to go down, and so it just becomes problematic. I mean, considering PERC has opened their doors for any time, it seems to me it can be done in twos. I mean, if it, you know, they're not limiting us to how many tours we can take. So
okay, so I'll organize that, and that's it.
Are you inviting Cayucas as well?
I was planning on it. I was actually going to require it. But we'll see what they say.
I mean, the way I would simplify that, and my legal assistant can help you on that, is just, you know, pick a few different dates that PERC's going to be available and leave it that kind of available for council members or for the community or for Cayucas to go and say these are the dates at 1 p.m. on these three dates. And
okay,
and then you could tell what day you're going so other council members know.
Yeah. Okay, I'll plan on doing that then for both Pismo and Santa Paula. The last one was regarding my comments about the RFP process, something that would be more formal to give us guidelines and an outline for how an RFP process, probably after a certain threshold, whether it's the size of the contract or perhaps the importance or style of the contract, give us a little more guidelines for how that would be brought forward. And Mr.
So basically
Schultz,
this would be a review of our RFP process?
To write a process.
Process proposal. We don't have anything formally, and so I've been looking at examples, and I haven't picked it up in a couple of months, but I think it's something that we should have. And like you said, different thresholds for the actual process we'd go through is a good policy to have in place.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Carla?
Oh, just kidding. I just, as all as I'm curious, is just at some point an update from the city manager on where we are
or where we're going to be in our request, our RFQ or RFP or whatever it is for transit and advertising promotions this year.
I'm sorry, that's I missed it. For what?
They're supposed to go out to bid, contract, whatever, for transportation and advertising this year, and I just wanted to know when that would be happening.
We can bring an update back on that. It's not happening yet.
Yeah, no, I know. We're just getting through budgets and all that, but I just want to make sure we stay on track with that being done.
Okay. And I don't have anything. And Rick has the closing quote.
Okay. It was between Irma Bombeck and Will Rogers, and I chose Will Rogers. I don't make jokes. I just watch the government and report the facts.
With that, we're adjourned.